Hello, welcome to Screen. We are on air. Good, good. Right. Hello. This week we're going to be reviewing Suffragette. I believe Beth, me, Liam, and Sasha will be reviewing it. We're having The Walk reviewed by Jake.
Yes, we are.
And we'll also have the films by YSC talked about by
Niall.
Okay. Right. So you possibly need to leave a bit earlier, yeah. Niall. So we'll get into YSC straight away. Do you want to just share a chair with Jake so that we can actually have you talking to a mic?
All right. I'll just
sorry about this.
It's all right.
Okay, sorry.
Technical difficulties.
A bit awkward technical difficulties there. Yeah, great, great second show. Right, so what have we got coming up?
Well, we've got Pitch Perfect in about like an hour or so.
Pitch Perfect 2.
Pitch Perfect 2. All right.
Which is the better one? That's the real question.
I'm sure it is. Okay. Then we've got Minions on Friday. And then on Monday we have Mr. Holmes with Ian McKellen.
Cool. Has anyone here seen any of those films?
Tempted to go and see Minions just to see what all the fuss is about.
I've seen this before me, and that was a good film. And a friend of mine who does linguistics actually is interested how you do a movie with like the main characters can't actually speak English. So
yeah. It could actually be this
really clever
kind of deconstruction of.
Yeah, it's actually really mature. It's actually a really mature film.
Yeah,
really analytical.
The Schindler's List of this age. Okay, does anyone else have any thoughts on Pitch Perfect 2?
My only experience of any of them is a woman patiently explaining to her two small children that Minion brand bananas were in fact just normal bananas.
Saw this in a supermarket or something?
Outside a supermarket.
Oh, that's slightly terrifying. They are kind of insipid and everywhere now, aren't they? Like some kind of Illuminati plot.
I see a Minion-themed wedding. I don't know how that was a thing, but...
Oh, dear.
It's
so terrible.
Everything.
Yeah. It did.
You literally cannot walk anywhere without seeing a Minion.
No.
I'm surprised someone like David Icke hasn't picked it up yet. The fact that Minions are so prevalent, and they must be like, they appear in threes, right? And they've got three eyes between them, so that's like a triangle, which is like Illuminati or something. I don't know. I mean, I was slightly worried about the film Mr. Holmes when it came out as a kind of, we're remaking another film that's already been made, but this time, to give it a twist, we're going to give mental illness. We're going to put mental illness in the film, which seems a bit kind of tasteless, but I did have a friend who saw it who said that it doesn't really kind of get bogged down in that, and it does actually sort of play out pretty well. So yeah, I might go give that a look.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of Sherlock Holmes, just sort of generally, or at least like the books and the BBC series and Robert Downey Jr. But I saw the trailer for it, and it looks like it's going to be definitely interesting. It's something that's not really been done before in the adaptations.
Because we usually see Sherlock as kind of a strong character rather than someone who's growing increasingly vulnerable. I think.
Older Sherlock Holmes is really.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Well, thanks for that, Neil. That's why I see. You've got anything else to add? Any other events going on?
I know that we're in the very early stages of planning the 50th anniversary, but that's just sort of going to be next year or after Christmas. So,
is that going to be just crazy?
You know, I'm sure
films nonstop.
Might have debauchery and movies.
Debauchery. Right. All right. Okay, well, I think without further ado, because we're going to probably rant about Suffragette for a while, I don't know about anyone else, should we do The Walk next, Jake?
We can indeed do The Walk.
Now, do you want to give us a sort of brief synopsis of what happens?
Maybe.
Okay. I'll play a clip.
Okay, so essentially, Philippe Petit is a young French acrobat and performer whose life's ambition is to string his high wire as high as he possibly can, finding its culmination after a rather amusing incident in a dentist's in a stringing high wire between the two towers of the World Trade Center in New York.
Okay, and here's a clip that will hopefully work.
Myself standing on an island floating in midair on the edge of the void.
Well, that doesn't appear to be working, which is slightly worrying. Well, there we go.
Of course, I...
Nope.
Automatically look across to the opposite tower. But then I have to dare to look down.
Sorry, we are having a few technical difficulties here.
Why don't I just talk a bit about the walk?
Anyway, yeah, just talk about it. That was a terrible clip.
I mean, the trailers are all very well, and that's the thing. So I think the first thing to point out is that this comes, in cinema terms, quite hot off the heels of the 2008 James Marsh sort of documento drama, Man on Wire, which is one of my very favourite films. Favorite films, and I think one of the best documentary films that's ever been made, which essentially consists of real Philippe Petit, very excited, very animated interviews, punctuated by reconstructions of the ascent into the towers and the
and also the construction that they had to go through
exactly. So this original documentary is sort of, it's got a lot of it relies very heavily on his drive and his nervous energy to kind of portray the excitement and the nerve you'd need to make this pretty impossible stunt happen. The Walk, one of Zemeckis' latest attempts, is a broader reconstruction of Petit's life, starting off in his very early youth in rural France with his early forays into sort of street acrobatics and street performing, his meeting with his sort of early love Annie, played by Charlotte Le Bon, who is one of the few native French speakers in this film, although that is actually handled fairly well, I think, in general. I think before I saw this, I was very much of the impression that this is a film that didn't need to be made, right? I mean, only 7 years ago, we've got a fantastic rendition of this event that I didn't really feel needed to be added upon. But I think that has changed a lot for me now that I've seen it. I think that it doesn't really try and do too much of what Man on Wire did, which was focus on the real people and focus very closely on the events themselves. It's a much wider focus on the life of these characters and the events leading up to it. It's almost as if the most disappointing part of The Walk, as I think I have mentioned to you, was the walk itself. The trudging, as it almost seems, between the towers. I mean, Joseph Gordon-Levitt isn't a high wire walker. He did learn to walk a high wire just before filming, but it wasn't fantastic. It seems a little bit flat, and it may have been that I saw I saw it in 2D, and it's and I hate 3D films, and
oh, me too.
And you definitely got the impression that Zemeckis, who obviously loves his special effects, as our pal Robert, there were a lot of kind of long down pan shots where the void kind of stares at you, and obviously you got the impression watching it in 2D that this is the moment where it would be like.
I have heard that like in 3D that is how it's meant to be seen, and that's what they designed it for.
But isn't that just pointless spectacle?
Is that forgivable? I mean, if you're going to be making a film that specifically you have to see in 3D to really appreciate it, it's kind of a bit unfair on those who are going to watch it in 2D. Should you release it in 2D at all?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's definitely worth watching in 2D. And I think that, especially if you liked Man on Wire, which I think, because there were obviously, when you're talking about the life of Philippe Petit, most of the footage of him doing wire walking is of him doing the walk between the two towers of the World Trade Center, because obviously that caught a lot of people's attention and the news crews were on site and it was all very interesting. So I almost felt like that section of the film didn't even need to exist.
Really?
For this to be... No, I didn't. I felt that of all the sections of the film that could have been taken out, I feel like the half an hour or so of it that was devoted to climbing up the World Trade Center and walking across it was just...
So it's a half an hour of him walking across...
Between,
because that sounds exhausting.
No. From the time they enter the World Trade Center to the time that he climbs off the roof, he for the final time.
Okay,
I think it's
okay.
About half an hour.
But how long is he on the wire for? Would you say 10 minutes?
It is nerve wracking and it's hard to tell.
All right.
And it is a little. You know, they obviously have a lot of effort to make it seem very tense.
And that works, even though it's not 3D, or.
I think that's another element that the documentary didn't do so well, obviously, because it's hard to feel massively worried about someone when they are telling you that they did it. If you can see what I mean. And the only footage you've got is archive footage from a long way away and a couple of quite shoddy, but relatively cheap reconstructions. I think it's worth a watch. I think that it's definitely a good effort, but that it's probably worth watching Man on Wire first to get another view on it before you go into it. Kind of,
because this is what I wanted to ask: is that if you hadn't seen Man on Wire, how different would your opinion of this film be, if at all?
I think had I not seen Man on Wire, had I not had a focus already on the events themselves from Philippe Petit, it probably would have been. I feel like the walk fleshed out the things that Man on Wire couldn't do.
Okay,
and so, as something that did that, it was a very successful.
So, is it two films independently made that kind of you want to see together? Then?
Yeah, and I think Petty was involved in the production of this.
Okay.
He trained Joseph Gordon-Levitt to walk wires. He did a bit of consultancy on it, and I think that the two are broadly seen as being like the walk is broadly seen as being a sort of feature film adaptation of the documentary that was Man on Wire. I feel that it did some of the things that Man on Wire did right. Correctly, I think it stayed away from 9/11, which was a big thing that Man on Wire did. Famously, it just didn't. Obviously, when you've got the Twin Towers,
yeah.
It's quite hard to avoid. It's quite hard to avoid that.
Yeah.
And there's only one very slight nod to it right at the end, and it's so minor that you wouldn't even notice it if you weren't looking for it. And I think it also stayed away from Man on Wire. If you've seen it, is very well known for its soundtrack, a mix of kind of Erik Satie and Michael Nyman, which has been seen as going very well with the material. And I think that the walk just, I think it must have been quite tempting to go down that route, but instead it just went straight on, as you probably heard in the trailers, or probably didn't hear in the trailers, just a sort of standard Hollywood.
All right. I think I just want to wrap up with the question of, so if you meet someone who's seen, from the sounds of things, if you meet a man or woman who's seen Man on Wire, you would recommend them seeing The Walk as kind of a follow-up. But if you met someone who'd just seen... If you met someone who's seen The Walk, you'd recommend they see Man on Fire to compliment it. Right. But if you've seen any Man on Fire,
when I saw the trailers for this, my impression was that I would say if you've seen Man on Wire, don't see this because it's just going to be a pointless remake and it will spoil it for you. And it's just a Hollywood adaptation of something that doesn't need adapting. Now that I've seen it, I'd say, if you're going to see The Walk, go and see Man on Wire first, or buy the DVD or see it in some other way first. It's fantastic, and I think that once you've seen that, and once you've seen, if you've already seen how animated Philippe Petit is, and then can project that onto Joseph Gordon-Levitt's performance, which I think is always just trying to live up to the animation of the real guy, then I think that'll be a really good thing to do.
So overall, see it, but with some caveats.
Yes, see it, but know the backstory first.
Okay. All right, then. So I guess we'll move on to reviewing Suffragette. Beth or Sasha, does either one of you kind of want to give a summation, a synopsis of the film? Or?
Well, I feel like, the suffragette movement is something that basically everyone is familiar with, and the fight for women's rights is something that, although perhaps underplayed, everybody is aware of to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
What the suffragette did was take it from a grassroots level, looking at the working class women's movement and how that interplayed with
expanding that story of just the Pankhurst story.
Yeah, and how the interactions between that lower class and those who were kind of controlling the movement, and obviously the law enforcement and the government at the time.
Oh, that's a good segue, law enforcement. Let's try playing a clip. Hopefully it will work this time.
When women attack the home of a government minister, we have reached a state of anarchy we can no longer ignore. This has to stop. The press can only be tamed so long. They grow more and more interested in these damned women, while we in government must try to quash every new story.
Pankhurst claims responsibility for the bombing and faces prison, while the real culprits go free. She's going to milk every ounce of attention she can in prison.
We've made some key arrests.
Punish those responsible. In whatever way you can.
You women cleaned yourselves up well. Couldn't find a scrap of dynamite on any of you.
And why am I?
Well, you'll be charged for legal meetings, if for nothing else. You know, there was a housekeeper on her way back when the bomb went off. She forgot her gloves. If she was 2 minutes later, what would that have done for your cause? Violence doesn't discern. It takes the innocent and the guilty. What gives you the right to put that woman's life at risk?
What gave you the right to stand in the middle of a riot and watch women beaten and do nothing? You're an hypocrite.
I uphold the law.
The law means nothing to me. I've had no say in making the law.
That's an excuse. It's all we have.
We break windows. We burn things. Because war's the only language men listen to. Because you've beaten us and betrayed us and there's nothing else left.
And there's nothing left but to stop you.
What are you going
to
do? Lock us all up? We're in every home. We're half the human race. You can't stop us all.
You might lose your life before this is over.
We will win.
Yeah, there we go. That's Carey Mulligan and Brendan Gleeson screaming at each other. That's probably the best film in the scene. Anyway, do you want to give it your review, Beth and Sasha?
Like Sasha said, it's a different facet to the suffragette movement, because obviously we do all know the history, but there is an element to the history with the socialist women who had another reason to protest with the working class and being having another layer of oppression on them. So it's a story about Maud, who's a laundry woman in the East End, and
Played by Carey Mulligan. Just point that out.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Who is initially adamantly not a suffragette, but becomes enticed by the promises that they're giving her, despite the chaos it can wreak in her life, and it does wreak in her life.
Yeah, I definitely think that one of the things that we talked about after we'd seen the film was the position of men in the film, because it's very easy in something that looks at a woman's right movement to portray...
To demonise men and make that the thing.
To make all of the male characters unapproachable and dislikable and anti-women. But what the film did very well was break down that and show a more three-dimensional view of Maud's husband, the police officer that Brendan Gleeson plays. Which we thought was really...
It did do a good job of making it clear that it's the pressures of the conventional society rather than the actual men themselves. So Ben Whishaw, the husband, they did a lot to show the relationship and how and the equality of the relationship between themselves, but then the hypermasculinity of like the work environment and all the pressures of the society around them is what caused them to have that inherent imbalance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, I'm slightly disagree on most counts, really. I feel with the male characters, and it's quite a large cast, and they have to have a lot of characters in it, so I can kind of understand where they're coming from, but I feel that kind of the men are either sort of just faces in the background, they're just sort of extras, essentially, which is kind of Helena Bonham Carter's husband more or less plays that role, or they are sort of part of the patriarchy, so we have the sort of very cliche kind of evil workhouse owner or manager, I'm not sure what rung he occupies, but they have this sort of the standard, you know, kind of sexist businessman who exploits his power and exploits his female workers, and then they have sort of Brendan Gleeson, who he was
quite apathetic though.
Well, he's great, but what does his character think? I have no idea if
that's what's so good about it. No,
but
isn't
it's
it?
Yeah, but it's not.
It is.
His character arc goes nowhere. I have no idea. Does he sympathise with them? Is he just actually sexist?
Yeah. Because Lloyd George was sympathetic historically.
Yeah, but so the character in the film doesn't appear to be.
I think it does. I mean, I think that did a good job of not, they didn't make Brendan Gleeson this demon police officer. They could have done this stereotype of like, I am going to get every woman protester. They didn't do that. And he did several times try and offer different... Like, he cares about the women in the film.
His idea of caring is to basically just sort of turn them to his side, to use them as spies against their cause.
Well, yeah,
but he's still in that environment, whereas that is the way of thinking. So you can't take it out of that context.
I didn't get it, because sort of sometimes it feels like he kind of is convinced of this idea that women are somehow less powerful than men and will not win this, and it's just not kind of the natural order of things. But at the same time, sort of portrays this, you know, I can't do his voice at all. But he sort of talks about how he's raised around women like Maud, the character of Karen Mulligan's play. So I feel, is he sympathetic or not?
But then I feel
doesn't
like,
go anywhere.
Yeah, but I feel like that then portrays him as a product of his environment, but also the beginning of that movement to break away from that in the male population. Because, as you were saying, there are a lot of male faces there who just serve as extras. It happens with police officers, but also it happens when you look at the shots of crowds
at the protests.
And there are men scattered in the crowd who, like, there's one guy at one point who's like, oh, why don't we have votes for women? Or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, he says, like, one word, which is, like, liar, and that's it. That's the only word we hear from an active male suffragette.
Yeah, but I do think that's important, though, because that side of history isn't what's being shown. Like, it is a film with an agenda, but it's very easy to cast characters and things that just serve as the antagonist, whereas it does a lot to... for itself to make the institution and make the end goal the antagonist, rather than it doesn't get mixed up with the little ones as much as it could
really
do
disagree.
As much as other things.
I think Brendan Gleeson could have been this kind of, you know, this sympathizer who's just caught on the other side of the war, which could have been really interesting, but they don't follow that up, and they have this cliche sort of patriarchal member of government who we heard at the start of that clip there, who sort of, well, you've got to solve these problems, I tell you. And it's every time he's in, it's just sort of, he just rattles off about how women shouldn't get the vote and then sort of shuffles off somewhere, and Brendan Gleeson just sort of sighs and does his job. It's a very kind of cliche kind of character that doesn't have much functional depth in the film, I found.
I mean, having not seen Suffragette...
You're going
to
critique it.
Having not seen Suffragette yet, but just like looking at the response to it that I've seen so far, I think the main... reason it seems to have entrenched itself very squarely as a sort of 3 out of 5 movie in a lot of people's minds seems to kind of be that whilst the individual characterizations are strong, the structural oppression portrayed is a little bit sort of pantomime, that Maud is kind of just an avatar for, oh, look, this is happening to her. Oh, no, this is happening to her. Oh, no. Oh, dear.
This is another thing I want to follow up on, that I feel that the character of Maud is painfully dull. She is surrounded by loads of female characters who have really interesting... particularly Anne-Marie Duff plays Mrs. Miller, who has this character who is basically just continually broken under the spokes of sexism, you know, her body, mind, and soul, and family, and everything is sort of hurt by this society. And she's such the more interesting character for it because she keeps on going.
Yeah.
Whereas
she was
Maud,
really a vehicle for
Maud sort of suffers, but her pain just sort of diminishes relative to those around her. Her actions diminish relative to those around her. I feel that they kind of just chose this character as this sort of more relatable, diluted version.
Especially
of
the experience and learning with her.
But what's the point of the film? I mean, because everyone knows that the women's movement suffered. It was pretty horrible.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I feel like the view of the suffragette movement is, I mean, before I watched the film, certainly you focus more on the figures like Mrs. Pankhurst and things who
Emily
are
Davison,
yeah,
and
like the top layer, the middle class women, wives of MPs and things who were fighting for this change. And you, like, I personally didn't know as much about the working class struggle for that. And I feel like by introducing Maud Watts as a really proper working class girl who's brought up in the laundry factory place. And then goes on to work there. It is a proper, as opposed to a kind of, right, basically, I, in my opinion, if you're an MP's wife and you decide that you want to be a suffragette, that's great, but you haven't had the working that the working class girls have to have gone through. Like, for a working class girl to break out of that is a true breaking out.
I mean, on the kind of classist thing, it doesn't really have much to say, because Maud's husband is more or less in the same boat with her. They have horrible wages, they work horrible jobs, and they're going to get sick and, you know, die impoverished. It doesn't go anywhere with it. It just sort of goes, oh, you know what? I mean, there's a part where it could have been interesting, where it has Brendan Gleeson talking, sort of attempting to convert more to his side by saying, you know, you're just foot soldiers, you're fodder for these sort of middle class people.
I did enjoy the military symbolism. There's a lot of things with military in it, and I do think that's a tool to use it to kind of compare the masculinity and the femininity of like the cannon fodder. Like they are foot soldiers for their cause. Why it's the same as that in the army. It's an equaling. That it's a nice contrast, I think.
I feel like we have a divide in the studio.
It doesn't go anywhere with anything. It restates points that I already know. I know that, you know, patriarchy was pretty bad and pretty horrible, and some of the suffragettes had a really rough time. But then it doesn't show the sort of the real sort of abhorrent nastiness that you catch whiffs off from Amory Duff's character. Neither does it sort of celebrate the victories of feminism, because it doesn't end with the women getting the vote. It merely ends with a kind of text role of saying, you know what, in the future they got the vote.
Yeah, but do you not think it's symbolic that one of the last main events, well, I don't want to spoil the film, but like the last event of the film, the fade out of the film, is in a way a victory.
It does a good job to relating it to now. So it at the very end it gives some statistics about
which are really relatable.
But in terms of, it goes right up to now, where Saudi Arabia, they're trying to get women's rights.
Well, some people there are trying to get women's rights.
Exactly. But it's a good
unfair,
way of...
That's a bit like...
A bit... okay.
No.
Let's not bring our politics degrees into this, Jake. Sorry. I see where you're coming from, but I feel that, you know, people knew, sort of had a gist of this history. If it wants to bring up the kind of the class side to things, it should have explored it more. If it wants to bring up the kind of the nastiness that was, you know, that was a product of this sexist society, it should have done that more. If it wanted to celebrate feminism, it should have done that more. All it does is kind of just sort of do this. I feel they sacrificed anything worthwhile to make it more relatable, just to make it so you know this history, so I can just restate it. I feel that it could have just gone so much further and done something so much more interesting than what it did, and I was really disappointed because the trailer got me really hyped up.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, when we left the cinema yesterday evening, there were a few girls who'd been sitting right beside us, and as they were walking behind us, one of them said, "Oh, this film really struck with me." So I think, like, if I want to sum it up, I would say that those reactions of the other audience members...
It's opening up a dialogue again.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, okay.
Given that there were protests at the premiere, so I think that's quite...
Protests of what?
For cuts to domestic abuse services.
Okay, I mean...
No, come on, that's good. I think that proves, at least in part...
All right, okay, well, I guess we'll sort of, you know, we'll compromise. Meet in the middle and say, maybe go see it, but don't have expectations too high, is perhaps my argument. Anyway, we're at the 30 minutes mark now, so we've now got the York... sport report. Come in. Sorry. So yeah, thanks for tuning in to Scream. Goodbye from everyone.
On air, 13:50 AM and online.
This is your Kinney's student radio station.
You are right.